Blog Talk Radio.
Conviction to Zero Redemption by Stephen L. Bobo.
Everybody, Stephen Bubble here, Bozilla, if you will. Welcome to the Kelp. And I'm supposed to have, I do have a guest on here. I hope she's there.
Okay. I'm here.
Welcome to the Kelp. How are you doing, ma'am?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I am doing great. If you will, go ahead. Could you please let the people know who you are? Who do I have on the phone with me today?
So you've got Melda Pearson, who is running to be the next state attorney of Miami-Dade County, Florida.
Okay, okay. Miami-Dade County, yes. We all know who's there. That's a big county. Yeah, they always talk about it when election times come up for the presidency. That's the main thing that African-Americans try to claim so they can win Florida. That's one big county.
It is. It's about 3 million people here, but sadly only about a third are registered to vote, which is a separate issue, but there you have it.
Oh, yes. I believe that. And that's one thing that I try to say, that if you are a convicted felon, try to find a way to vote. Like I said, I'm a convicted felon. In Ohio, I can vote. North Carolina, I could vote. But like I said, when there's things that you state that you can vote, that does take a lot of good people out the running to be able to change this country. But I do want to thank you for coming on. And I want to know, one good thing is, how do you feel about all the stuff that's going on in this country right now? How was anything in Miami, Florida, that area of Florida? Was there any big protesting there?
Yeah, we had a number of really large protests. It's been basically every single weekend, a couple of on the weekdays, but definitely very heavy on Saturday and Sunday of the last few weeks. It's heartbreaking that we're here as a country, but at the same token, I really I'm happy to see the next generation really get involved civically and demand change, because at the end of the day, this country responds to protest. I mean, people are like, want to sit there and criticize and be like, oh, but, you know, why are they blocking streets? Why are they blocking highways? Because it works. And as a result of these protests that we see happening around the country, we've seen a number of police departments ban the use of the chokehold and other techniques that harm, that can result in death. We've seen discussions with regards to what policing should look like in the 21st century and going forward. And we're really getting to have discussions on racial equity, which is tremendous.
Yes. And you know what? And I agree with everything you just said. If we have more people in the position that you're in, I think this country would be a lot better as far as people who are willing to listen. And I think that's what the young people want, is someone to listen to them. I remember growing up, and I remember when there was a little bit of protesting. I didn't understand it. I thought it was just a bunch of people wanting to have fun, making problems and stuff like that. You know, but these young generation, my daughter included, she's one who's been out there marching in North Carolina. And like I said, there is a lot of – I love to see these young people, just like you said, who are trying to make that change. And I tell people all the time, they're the ones who are going to take care of me as I get older. And that is what people need to understand, that. Because we have to work with these kids, and that's why I made up the pipeline. And I have a lady who does my who does my radio show. Her name is Danielle, and she wants to talk. Probably she's working with Charmin to you and ask you about what can be done. I'm going to have her do that. I'm going to ask her to jump in when she can to ask you the question about the kids, juveniles who have disabilities, and the police officers don't seem to take time to get to know what's going on. That's just not police officers. That's also prison guards and prison. They don't understand. Mm-hmm. And Danielle, if you're on, go ahead and jump in and take it over.
Here I am.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Can you hear me? Okay. I just wonder, like, juveniles with, I know it's, we've talked about the pandemic of COVID and everything like that, but I believe there's another pandemic, and it's the pandemic of children being diagnosed with ADHD, ADD, autism, and so forth. There's like so many more than we saw 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago. And I think that our law enforcement needs to be better trained to deal with the symptoms that brings on, because I think that force is being used when really a different way of speaking, because they hear and they understand differently, could keep a lot of violent confrontations from even taking place. And also a lot of times I believe that our disabled youth, I wouldn't even say disabled because my son is autistic and I don't call him disabled, so I'm not going to call these children disabled either, differently abled than what they call neurotypical youths. They don't quite understand, or a lot of times they are being set up by influences such as gangs and so forth that can get them to do their dirty work for them. And these kids are ending up in, depending on their age, a lot of times they're ending up in adult prisons when their level of maturity and their level of comprehension is of that of, you know, a child much younger. And I just kind of wonder, you know, will that be taken into account when we're dealing with law enforcement and how they're treating our minorities? You know, it's no secret that minorities earn less on average. They do not have the medical resources on average that our European counterparts do.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're not getting diagnosed, and they're also not getting the therapies that they need in order to be as productive as they possibly can be, especially if you have parents that don't know what to do with these kids. And I think our people need to get out of that whole ain't nothing wrong with my baby mentality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think with education comes solutions. But what I want to ask you is, as you're running, what would be your stance on young people and the penal system?
For sure, for sure. So all of what you're saying is absolutely correct. And there's a couple things I want to address, you know, in your comments. Number one, interacting with law enforcement, right? And that's why I'm a firm proponent and a firm supporter of community policing. But like back in the day, community policing, right, where officers got out of their cars and got to know the community that they served. So that way, you know which kids maybe, you know, maybe have autism or might be a little bit slow or may have some, you know, mental health concerns. So that way you deal with them differently, right? As opposed to you're coming on the scene, you know nothing about anybody, and then all you're seeing is someone who may be presenting in a certain way, and then you have a conflict that ends tragically, right? So that's why I think community policing is so incredibly important, and really getting to a place where we have law enforcement living and working in the communities that they serve, and there's not that separation, right, that us versus them mentality.
Exactly.
The second aspect around juvenile justice is that, you know, as part of my platform, I want to eliminate what's called direct file. Now, Florida is one of a few states that has a procedure that takes kids out of the juvenile system and places them into the adult system, right? And mm-hmm. so when that happens, they're not necessarily getting the same level of services that way they would get in the juvenile system. And, you know, they're treated differently and all of that. So I think it's important for kids to stay in the juvenile system because, number one, the human brain doesn't fully develop until the age of about 25, 26 years old. So
yes.
you can't hold kids accountable the same way you would a 27-year-old adult because just the mindset is completely different, right? And then the second mm-hmm. aspect is that you have to take into consideration any other issues like we touched on before, mental illness or being differently abled and making sure that they're connected with the proper services. So are they getting the right program in school? Because sometimes, you know, the learning plans are not really as tailored as they should be, or the teachers they're working with don't have as much patience for dealing with a child that learns differently, and then that creates conflict in the classroom, and then you end up with the school-to-prison pipeline with the teacher just being ill-equipped and then relying on law enforcement to deal with an issue that could theoretically have been dealt with in-house within the school. And then the third
Absolutely.
Portion of all of that is making sure that we're also funding more social workers and counselors for the school as opposed to police officers. Because, again, the
mm-hmm.
temptation is there if you don't have the right amount of counselors to be able to work with the kids that may have some different challenges. It's just very easy just to, you know, call the school resource officer and have the child taken into the system. Right, as opposed
mm-hmm.
to, all right, you need to go sit with the social worker today because obviously, you know, you're having a rough day and you're not able to really sit down and focus the same way that the other students are able to, you know. So
mm-hmm.
those are all different parts of the system that need to be addressed, and I will be addressing or using my platform to address when I win the office of state attorney.
I like it. Speak it like it's already there. That's right.
Have to. Got to speak life.
That's right. That fills me with a lot of hope. Just because I've worked in the school system, and so often it is they call the resource team or whatever to basically just get them out of there instead of finding out why.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I wish more educators and administrators would understand that within children, yes, you have, they're going to be off the chain. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But every behavior is a means of communication. It's up to us as the adults to find out. We're in a position of trust. We're in a position of authority. But we're also in a position of mentoring, and whether or not that's what you wanted to be when you applied for this job as a teacher or administrator or security guard or whatever, that when you are in charge of children, you're basically a mentor, and any and everything
mm-hmm.
you do, they are watching and they are listening. And I applaud you for recognizing that they're not just little adults. And to be handled as such.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, and also at the end of the day, listen, you know, our teachers do so much. We ask them to do so much, and we as a community are not paying them appropriately. So, you know, when you have situations where teachers have huge class sizes, are going into their pockets to buy things like chalk and markers and different tools that they need to be able to teach in class, you know, that's showing that we're undervaluing our educational system. And then we wonder
mm-hmm.
why we have bad outcomes, you know, later on down the line. We have to mm-hmm. properly, if we say education is important, if we say the children are our future, listen, put up or shut up, right? The budget tells
right,
you
right.
What
your
value,
money, your mouth
period,
is.
End of story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think that they're not understanding that language. I don't think that that our lawmakers and things are understanding that language, that what you say on that podium does not always translate into what we're seeing. If you say you're all about education and you're all about teachers and all about kids getting, you know, the future that they need, and yet cutting programs left and right or cutting funding left and right, when you're cutting funding, you're saying you don't need this, or, you know, and then you look at it and it's not hurting their kids because their kids aren't even in the city public school. Their kids are in somebody's private school somewhere. And so they're saying that your kids' education is not important as my kids' education, and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter if your kid has crayons or if your kid has software programs that are being used in, you know, 65% of the city, except for this particular district, because, you know, we just don't think it's important for them to have it. That's telling, that's saying that your children are not as important as my children. And every child is important. And when a child doesn't feel valued or important, that's when they start to go into the pipeline, because they're going to figure out one way or the other, I'm going to be important, whether it's going to be good or it's going to be bad.
Exactly.
Well,
you, like you just said, the state of Ohio, they're cutting. The governor already said they're cutting. I forget how much money they said they're cutting here to Columbus, because Columbus Public Schools is going to be the first ones to get hit, and they're going to hit the, like you said, the special education classes and something else. But they're also going to leave all the sports stuff up first. I'm not saying that these kids don't need something to do, but if you're going to cut the education out, then you're going to make athletes be done with a box of rocks going to college. Then they're going to flunk out in college, and everybody's going to look back at the public schools here in that city saying, what were y'all doing? So you can't fault the schools if you're cutting the budget.
Exactly.
And I agree, agree with both y'all saying. It's so true. I just hope that more people elect you in Florida, because usually here in Ohio, whatever Florida does, Ohio comes right behind it. And that's how it's always been, as long as I can remember. What Florida does, Ohio comes in next. But that's in what Daniel says completely right, because we're doing stuff for our pipeline here in the United States. So we also have a chapter over in Africa, and we're doing stuff there. The kids there are worse than way worse than the kids here, but they are so upbeat and love what we do for them. We try to do what we can for them. But like I said, a lot of people don't want to help out. You know, I never ask nobody for money. We try to do as much of our stuff out of our own pocket. But like I said, there's only so far we can go.
Right.
But right now, what we need to do is what this country has, our country, the United States, has to get on their feet with these kids. And that's the main thing. I love what you said, and that's exactly what it does. I just hope people listen to what you're saying. And that's the main thing. Get out and vote. They have to vote. Because if they don't vote, then you don't have a say, and it's really messed up for everybody else.
Exactly. And especially when we talk about voting, you know, more broadly, a lot of times people are very focused on presidential elections, which I'm not saying it isn't important, but on the scheme of things, when you're talking about, let's say, the topic of education, the people that have the most say with regards to education are your school board members, right? Your legislators who vote on the budget and how much money should be allocated. And then, you know, maybe your mayor with regards to some other aspects of, you know, like, for instance, who the superintendent of schools should be, or, you know, some of those hiring decisions. So, and these are all local elections that a lot of people just pass on over. When we talk about the school to prison pipeline, the person who is directly in charge of stopping that pipeline or making sure the pipeline is flush is your state attorney or your district attorney, right? And again, that's another down ballot election that people often skip over. So with me running for state attorney, you know, it's not only just, you know, name recognition, hey, get to know me and this is my qualifications and this is what I'm about, but it's also reminding people about how an elected prosecutor, how your state attorney, your district attorney, your commonwealth attorney, depending where you are in the country, the title changes, but it's the same job, what role they play in your day-to-day life. Because a lot of people think, oh, well, I don't get arrested or I don't plan to get arrested, so why should I care about the criminal justice system? But when we talk about these issues of school-to-prison pipeline and how you have kids coming back to the community who don't have the skills they need to be successful, are going to end up in a life of crime because that's the way that they're going to be able to support themselves because the school system has failed them, you know, that's all directly related to how you vote. So you folks got to really get engaged and think about these things and pay attention to these elections, and not just pay attention, but educate yourself and vote. You know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Like if people don't want to, if they don't want to vote, then they silence themselves, and in a roundabout way, you're saying that what is happening is okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's one
mm-hmm.
thing about being, it's one thing to be, you know, armchair advocate, but it's another thing completely to get out there, vote, voice your opinion. Voice your opinion where it matters, and that's the polls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and understand exactly, and understand. I think that the education should not just teach the president and the Constitution and all that, but teach exactly what you were saying. Who's in charge of what, where? So when you know this information as to who is, for lack of a better term, who is the facilitator of policy, then that's who you need to vote for first. Because
mm-hmm.
if you've got a facilitator that's not interested in what's going on, then how do you think it's going to get any higher than that? How do you really believe that any change is going to be made? You know, everybody wants to start at the top.
Mm-hmm.
But last time I checked, there wasn't a tree that grew from leaf to trunk.
Amen.
There's not a flower
mm-hmm.
that grows from flower to root. It's root to flower. It's trunk to
right.
leaf. And if you know, I think people need to understand that we need our roots and we need our trunks to be strong in order for us to get change.
Absolutely.
In order for us to get, you know, what we need.
Right. Absolutely. So engagement is key. And that's another thing that I definitely want to highlight with all of the protests and everything. Again, it's so great to see, you know, folks involved in all that. But just remember, now that you're done protesting, you got to take yourself to the polls. Right? Because,
okay, come
again,
on, man. Say it again for the cheap seats. Say it again for the cheap seats.
When you're done protesting, make sure to go vote, right? Because
right.
protesting is a great first start. It raises awareness. It gets people talking. And it starts
mm-hmm.
to push towards change. But to get that long-lasting policy change that we need to keep moving
mm-hmm.
things forward as a country, that only comes in the ballot box. It only comes
exactly.
from the ballot box. So
you can only march
because,
so far and walk so far. You need to march yourself to them polls.
Exactly, because at the end of the day, it's a matter of keeping and holding your elected officials accountable. If they,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you have folks who are like, you know, making critical comments about the protests and not bothering to look into the underlying issues of why people are marching, you need to vote them out. If people are like, all
yeah.
right, well, you know, I'll give you a little something just so you can stop marching, but it's not going to be any real prolonged or systemic change, you got to vote them out and vote in
That's
people
right.
who care about the cause and will make the bold moves necessary
mm-hmm.
to be able to have long, sustained change so we're not back marching 3 years from now.
Exactly.
Then we'll
we're just giving pacifiers. That's all that.
Mm-hmm.
That's all those little tiny changes are. It's a pacifier.
Exactly.
You know, the thing about it is a pacifier only lasts so long. If the child is hungry, if a child is hungry, that pacifier is only going to satisfy so long.
Exactly.
And right now, our society is hungry. We need to be fed.
Yeah, and we saw something similar when we were looking at 2016, where we had, excuse me, maybe 2014, where it was just that wave of like Michael Brown, Eric Garner, Tamir Rice. It was like one after the other.
Mm-hmm.
And folks were like really upset. But the difference was it was under the administration of President Obama. And, you know, him having, you know, black children, you know, he felt this close to home. And, you know, that's when we really saw these discussions around the 21st Century Policing Task Force that was put together by the White House. And they had a number of police chiefs and different law enforcement and community leaders and thinkers and you know, professors getting together to really talk about and create a plan of what policing could look like going forward. And there was federal money that was coming down to the various police departments to support community policing, to support some of these initiatives. And, you know, like it didn't fix the problem overnight, but we were on a good track because there was a huge emphasis on training and continuing diversity and, you know, doing different tactics that have exactly. And then when the administration changed in the beginning of 2017, all of those things went out the window. And now we're reaping the benefits of it because now we're back to pre-2014 where some of these changes were never implemented or there was no accountability measures with regards to these changes, or some of the changes were made with no teeth. So in other words, you said, okay, you know, we're going to have continued diversity training. But nobody was required to go, or it was a situation where it was once a year and that doesn't address deep-seated habits or stereotypes or misconceptions. So now you have a situation where because of that lack of accountability, we're back to square one. So again, it's like once we make progress, we have to make sure not to take our foot off the gas, but to keep pushing forward and to hold our lawmakers accountable to make sure that we don't go backwards and have to rebuild all over again.
Exactly. This situation and these issues are more than social media fodder and catchy T-shirts. It's this. I think once we got this current administration in, it really amplified what their priorities were, and it certainly was not black or brown people, and it certainly was not the training of the police department. Really, like I by heart at heart, I'm a geek, and there's a movie called The Princess Bride, and they were talking about the Brute Squad. And the Brute Squad was called to clear out all the undesirables.
Right.
Point, we're on a very slippery slope to where our law enforcement is almost being encouraged to become brutish. And then consequently, that makes, I mean, for any, and you know, for any, there's going to be consequences no matter what you do. I just happened to look at the clock real quick because, you know, I get to run in my mouth and I look at the clock and I'm like, oh, my goodness, we have 2 minutes. And this is certainly a conversation that needs to continue. And the hard questions and the uncomfortable questions need to be brought up again. And I wanted to know if you would have time in the very near future to do a part two.
I would love that. I would love that. I love these types of discussions, and it's all about raising awareness and seeing what's working in different parts of the country and what's not and how we can learn from each other. So absolutely.
Okay.
That's great to know. That's great to know because, you know, Bo Zilla liked to ask some questions, but I couldn't ask them. That's okay, though. I do love it, though. I love it. I love it. We have about three people. You know, it's just my program, so, you know, I get talked out of it. It's okay. We have some calls lined up to talk to you, but those people would love to call back the next time we have her on because she will definitely be back. I definitely want her on because she sees things how this country needs to be ran, and I agree 100% with it. So, like I said, the pipeline and Bo Zilla has your back. No matter what, even though I'm in Ohio, I still have your back. I will promote you as much as I can here.
I got family down in Florida. I'm going to be telling them.
Please do. Please do. Spread the word. And for folks on your show who want to learn more about me, and if, you know, I know a lot of folks may be in Ohio, but if you have family, friends in the Miami area, or you just care about progressive criminal justice reform and progressive candidates, learn more about me at www.melba4miami.com, melba4miami.com. Donate if you want to assist maybe calling Florida voters. You can sign up to volunteer as well. So definitely hit me up on the website, and I look forward to another opportunity to chatting with both you, Steve, and you, Danielle.
Thank you. We got to say peace.
Peace out. Thank you.
Take care. Peace. Bye.
Bye.